Always Record, episode 131. Always Record has been pretty quiet over the last few weeks, just scheduling. Everyone's been super busy with day jobs and whatnot. But I guess we were a little pent up, because this one definitely went on for quite a while.
The way I see it, Barry, this should be a very dynamite show.
Hello, is this Mr. Wembley?
No, this is Mr. Scott.
Oh, okay. Hi, Scott.
No, it's Mr. Scott.
Oh, Mister. Oh, I'm sorry.
Scott's not my first name.
Right.
Wembley's
right.
My first name. Scott's my last name.
Right. Wembley Scott. Yes. I'm glad. I've been trying to contact you for a while. I heard you were in the Galapagos Islands recently. Am I correct?
Yeah, I was directing my new animated kids cartoon, Xenomorphs.
Right. Well, you've been working on this for a number of years now, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, it's been many, many years in the making. It's required tremendous funding from the military-industrial complex, lots of product placement, and slave labor. But ultimately, it's a project of passion. I couldn't do anything else.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, it was actually your company that invented the platypus so many years ago that you're now working with, who's been funding these projects.
That is true. I'm not at liberty to discuss too much about the development of the platypus project.
Right, perfectly understandable.
I mean, there is a man standing over my shoulder with a gun to my head that I think I've said too much.
Right. Well, I sent him to your place. He works for me, so he's not going to shoot. You know the list of things that you're not supposed to say. We can discuss the Platypus Project, but only with the parameters that I emailed to you earlier. You received this email, if I'm not mistaken.
I did, but since the email was set to self-destruct in 30 seconds, and I'm a very slow reader, I did not make it through the entire list.
Right. Well, that's understandable. I can resend that.
Could you send a computer for me to view it on?
Yeah, I'll have my boys send you a computer. It should be to your place within the next 20 hours. I'm going to have that shipped directly to you. We can pick this up. Okay, hold on. I'm getting a message from Jeremy Knight, who I said, are you available? Short notice for an Always Record episode just for fun. You know, I also, Bill said he might stop in later. So I'm going to tell him it's actually now. I hope this is okay. I kind of...
The time is always now. I'm all in.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad to hear it. There's a number of things have been on my mind. Have you spoken? That's not a word. Talk. Who says that anymore?
I find myself saying that sometimes. I immediately stop myself, but I can't help but say it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking to Jeremy now. I'm hoping that all the pieces will come together, and that's my hope. That's my aim. Okay, what's the topic? I think I have Skype installed. What does he care what the topic is? What's the topic? What is this? Topic is whatever.
The topic.
Is that correct?
The topic of Capricorn or the topic of Cancer?
Right. Topic of Cancer. That's what I'll tell him. Topic of... Oh, Capricorn is even better. Okay. Well, we got him here, so... I mean, we've already... had him on, so that shouldn't... Okay.
So, I actually... it's funny, because I've been thinking about him a lot lately. I have to do... So, you see, I've been doing these synchronized videos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe the fifth question is Jeremy. I'm pretty sure he's the next one up. And, I've been trying to just sort of figure out how to... compress or even address some of the Manson material which it's kind of hard not to because of the t-shirt becomes a sort of focal point in a way, but it's not directly related to his question. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like
I know exactly what you're saying. This is an important talk. I actually, you know who would be fucking great to have on? I wonder if give me a second here. Let's see here. Alex Fulton. Don't know if he's around though, and I don't have his number. But he's somebody to talk to about this. I've been reading Peter Lavinda. I basically I went down to Logos, the local bookstore here, and a year ago, or maybe something less. But anyways, I went down there and they had all three copies of Sinister Forces, a grimoire of American political witchcraft, and I really wanted it, and then I saw Alex found it, but they were $36 each. Because they were new, even though it's a used bookstore, and I actually waited. And oh shit, I got an incoming call. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, I had Bill there on another line, so I'm going to contact Bill on this line. Does that make sense? Mr. Klaus. To Klaus for comfort. Doesn't need to be a video call. You need to end this call before you can start a new one? No, I want to add to call. How do I do that?
I think he's here.
Oh shit.
Stop talking about him quick.
Shit.
Bill.
Is this William? William Klaus? Shit.
BK93, do you hear me? KDK12, BK93.
KDK12, BK93. Hey guys, I'm here. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
That
Hey, you and me
makes three
both
of
got.
us.
Is it going on?
Well, we're going on. We're here. I was discussing the possibility of getting some other people to rejoin us possibly. We want your feedback on Popeye's chicken. We're wondering if you have any input both on a symbolic level and on a anything else you might want to add, if, especially if it relates to this prime minister with the pig situation.
Well, you know where the name Popeye from Popeye's Chicken comes from.
From Popeye the character, the sailor man?
That's what you would think, wouldn't you?
You one would think that, yes, sir.
But if you're a sink head, you go deeper, brother.
Right, well, then you got to ask yourself what Popeye got his name from in the first place, right?
Well, no, it's a very, I'm sure you're going to spin your head and give us some really good tangents on this, but Popeye Doyle is the inspiration for Popeye's.
That right?
from the movie French Connection.
Really? How do you know? Do you just put you assess this? You think, have you heard a CEO from Popeyes, a large
Have you
chicken?
Wikipedia'd it?
Right.
Well, I had just recently watched French Connection for the first time and was stunned to find out that the movie is based on a real story.
Sure.
So it's really just sort of a remake of this guy, Popeye Doyle, and his partner, like their days in the early 60s, stumbling onto this heroin ring where heroin was coming in from France.
I
And
get it. So Popeye's chicken is essentially heroin.
well, you can take it where you want, but the guy who started Popeye's Chicken loved the movie so much that he named his chicken shack after Popeye, and then lo and behold, the thing blows up, and to make it family friendly, it goes from a hard-edged New York cop to a spinach-eaten pedophile.
You think it was terrorists that blew up
You
his
think
chicken
Popeye
shack?
was a pedophile?
I was just making sure you were listening.
I have not heard that theory before.
I've heard the racist theory, all right. Well, that one's not a theory,
Well, if
but.
you notice that olive oil doesn't have very much breast development, we don't know how old she is. I don't know, the mind wanders.
Olive oil is obviously 23.
Obviously.
I think
But
olive oil is definitely of age. I don't think her small breast should be a factor there.
right. The baby that they're taking around, that one I wonder about if that baby is being treated properly. I always wonder about that. It seems like they don't really tend to the baby as one would think that one should tend to.
Oh, they are definitely delinquent parents or guardians or whatever they are.
Yeah, they really don't do a good job in general. And I think it's probably to do with their heroin addiction.
Maybe that's why, is it Bluto or Brutus? What's that guy's name?
Depends on the incarnation. Yeah, he's both.
He's got many heads. He's like a Malaysian deity. But
isn't that figure always trying to get the baby? And doesn't he actually pretty good care of that child whenever he gets the baby?
He actually, Pluto or whatever the fuck, he takes much better care of that child than Popeye.
I think so as well.
Popeye doesn't even seem like, it's just like the baby is like an accessory or something. It's like it doesn't even...
It's like a chihuahua he'd carry in his purse.
Right. Yeah. But he would have no problem like juggling or something given the right circumstances. You know.
I think I've seen him juggle a chainsaw, a table, and the baby all at once.
Right. That's why we know that he could beat Superman if given the right circumstances once again.
So how did we get to Popeyes? Why are we on Popeyes?
I just know that you have this Popeye thing, and I've observed it over time.
Tell us about the correspondences between Popeye eating spinach to get superhuman powers and Popeyes using flavor-blasted cornstarch on their foods to...
Do they even serve spinach at Popeyes?
They have greens.
Oh, they have greens.
They have Soylent greens.
Right.
Yeah, how about that Soylent thing is real now? It's up and running. You can order it yourself.
What is it?
Soylent, the non-food food. It's basically just a bucket of chemicals that you can drink. You don't have to eat again.
Okay.
And so is it cocaine?
Well, it's like a pasty cream of wheat kind of cocaine, but it's all loaded up with your... Yeah, it's bizarre. The guy's been living on it for like 2 years or something.
Interesting. Let's see if he makes it to three.
But anyways, you could live on Soylent better than you could live on Popeye's chicken, which is kind of frightening.
True. Yeah. Well, what do you think of this? The things that Mark LeClaire has been writing recently? Did you read his recent article? I found it fascinating.
I spoke with LeClaire for a fractured 25 minutes on Skype recently about some stuff. I communicated to him that he sent out an email with the blog post, and I scanned the blog kind of quickly, and in the middle of it I said, wow, this guy's really ripping off Mark LeClaire. And then three quarters through the article, I said, hey, wait a second. And then I realized it was Mark LeClaire.
This is Mark LeClaire, yeah.
I thought he had stumbled upon something that had inspired his mind. And
By the way it was written immediately? Jesus.
I kind of told him. I said I felt like his heart wasn't in it.
Really?
It didn't have the usual snap and crackle of a Mark LeClaire post of that size and of that scope.
He's getting into the art scene now. You know.
There's a lot of scenes in that art scene.
There is. It's true. But I found it very enjoyable. I don't agree with him in certain ways.
How can you not agree with him?
I don't feel that the humanizing of mice, like humanizing mice, doesn't like. I don't really see that going in the direction of the secret of NIMH. Now, I could be totally off, and that could totally be where things go. I think that might be helpful to humanize mice to test things better than just testing on mice. I mean, I don't really know. You know, I don't know. It brings up some interesting questions, and that's the point. And the real point is that he did notice some certain things in Rosemary's Baby that people have pointed out before, but haven't really gone into as much in the realm of implications. And I actually feel that his Roe versus Wade deal is actually a legitimate thing, which he said a year ago on our show, as I recall, that
I think the Roe versus Wade thing is really on point.
Yes.
The idea that so the, you know, when she's, and obviously it's topical for the time, right? This idea of abortion sort of coming as a political hot topic, and it probably has been ever since, but right, when she's saying, they're calling her Roe, she says, I'm not getting an abortion.
It's alive, she says.
Right, right, right. I mean, this is, it's almost like, so I was actually doing a bunch of Rosemary's Baby research last night. It's completely unrelated. But I found myself sort of thinking, I don't know if I can really compress this, but just like we've talked about the movie Alien being a sort of abortion narrative, right? The spaceship's called Mother. She's got this thing growing in it that she has to get rid of. She escapes with her. I mean, the spaceship's not called Mother. It's the control room is called Mother.
Right.
But you know what I mean. And
but all intents and purposes, it's the mother's ship.
Exactly, it's the mother's ship. She escapes with her pussy intact and all this sort of stuff. I don't know. I found these as sort of like striking narratives. Because have either of you ever seen Roman Polanski's movie I want to say it's not called Sabotage, it's
Repulsion?
Yes, Repulsion.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
Which one is that? I think I've seen it. Is it she alone in the apartment?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just sort of found myself sort of following through this narrative, because this was what I was reading about was the idea that Polanski, either Polanski considered it or other people considered this his like apartment trilogy,
right?
With Rosemary's Baby being part of that.
Sure.
And
I love that. That's excellent.
So, just sort of seeing a sort of through line through this the woman in Repulsion also. Being raped, but sort of getting back at her. I don't know, the whole thing is such a fucked up area to get into. Obviously, the content is fucked up, but as far as almost like these opposing, or if we say all art is propaganda, sort of opposing propaganda pieces for various positions on abortion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No. No, it doesn't make sense.
How do you say the word rape and then Violator Hellspawn just appears?
That's how it works. If you say it, we said it three times in the conversation.
I did think I actually did say it. Time.
If you say it three times, then Violator Hellspawn shows up.
That's how you summon me.
But I was looking in the mirror, so I'm the one who made it happen. See, if I don't know, maybe you're looking in the mirror too, but that's apparently a key part factor in the thing.
It is. I'm glad you mentioned that. How's it going, guys?
I thought I was rapping on the scrying glass, but I guess I
mispronounced it. No, you were raping
it.
On the...
Yeah.
You were ear raping on the scrying glass. Don't say that. Don't ever say that. Goonies never say rape. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyways, yeah, we're discussing Rosemary's Baby, Mark LeClaire's article, I guess you could say, his blog post on... humanizing rodents, which he puts in the same category as like Soylent Green, like this is that we're eating the babies, and I don't know the full degree. I was saying I'm kind of like I don't really know what to make of humanizing rodents. I think with the fetus livers and gallbladders, but which is totally checks out. It's the same company. I mean that they named themselves. And then what is the company doing? But it says it's using, you know, newborn fetuses or whatever. So anyways, but I was saying I don't see it turn into a total Secret of NIMH situation.
I obviously am late to that conversation. What's going on? Rodent fetuses?
Yeah, well, they're taking the fetuses from Planned Parenthood to humanize rodents for testing. So that if you want to test on a rodent, it can be closer to a human replicant in terms of its genetics. So that's something that's happening, apparently. And Mark has his feelings on it, which are, you know, valid.
Well,
crazy.
I see, like, I mean, the second in command at PETA has a pig artery in her heart when they were still using animal parts for transplants, and bovine blood's identical to human blood. So if you eat pigs or cows, you're in a sense eating something that's similar to, you know, human flesh and blood.
So was David Cameron trying to maybe, was that like a genetic experiment he did in college?
Which was,
did you read the article basically breaking it down?
Well, what is it? It's a biographer made the statement, and now he's dealing with that, right? I mean,
which
basically,
I'm fascinated. I'm sure Mark has a completely complex connection on this. So the prime minister was part of a certain boys-only club at Oxford, right?
Right.
And they're rich boys, and rich boys play funny games. And this Bullingdon Club, apparently, that he was part of, which may obviously you think of Lord Bullingdon of
sure,
Kubrick's masterpiece. What was that? I can't even think of the name now. It's such a normal little name. What's the movie with Ryan O'Neill?
You're talking about Fear and Desire? You're talking about?
No. You're talking about, Barry Lyndon.
Barry Lyndon. Anyways, so the prime minister of the Bullingdon Club, and they get together, and one of their things is they go to like a restaurant, and they make a reservation. They all pile in, and they get hammered, and they do really disgusting, embarrassing kind of things, and they trash the place, and then they leave, and they pay for all the damages. It's like one of their sort of rituals that they do. It's a
rituals.
And so one of the things is sort of like a hazing, kind of like, are you in or are you out?
Will you fuck this dead pig head?
Well, no, they just brought out they probably ate the pig, and then they brought out the head of the pig, and they said, hey, Dave, you know what'd be really funny is if you
fuck this thing.
Well, if you put your pecker into the pig's mouth, and being in, as you know, he's a prime minister, obviously he's in. He obliged, and
Bill, I actually read the article that you're referring to because you shared it on Facebook. I just want to say one thing, and again, this could be conjecture, but what the article was stating was that the point of putting the dick in the pig wouldn't be to be funny, but that particular boys' club. Part of what they do, and this we've heard this from Skull and Bones and different secret societies like that, where basically you have to share your degrading sexual exploits so that they can be used as blackmail against you.
Absolutely, that's what goes on all the time. We right. know this. I mean, that's
and that was
that's
right. That was part of Skull and Bones. Is right. You have to list off every person you've had a sexual encounter with. So that this way they have a record of it if need be.
Well, you actually confess in the coffin. Right. You go through all your sexual experiences in the coffin while they encircle you and you're naked, you know.
It's the Robert Anton Wilson rap. He has a whole rap about the one society where to get in you have to write a letter where you have to confess all of your darkest sins and embarrassing stories. And then, little do you know, later down the road, if you get into a position of power and you're going against the certain individuals who gave you the power, they have this, you can prove by handwriting analysis that, you know, they have everything on you, so they own you.
Right.
You do it in a young age where you're vulnerable, and then they basically own you for the rest of the thing. So it seemingly is a very old school kind of contract that you unwittingly sign to be part of a structure that gives you power. So
sure.
But right back to Rosemary's Baby.
Can we just
there you go.
Can we acknowledge really quickly how you guys have seen Black Mirror?
No, I have not.
I haven't seen the episode in question. I've seen
immediately, dude. It's the fucking, it's, and that was Kubrick, like, that's a Kubrick meets Rod Serling show. I mean, that's what it is. The first episode, Prime Minister fucks a pig.
But that's a big step from putting your pecker into
Oh, that's a huge step. He put his dick into a dead pig head, and this guy fucked the pig. They're both the prime minister.
But wasn't when he fucked the pig.
No, but
he was just a college kid.
But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I think David's point is this isn't even like a sink stretch. This isn't even like, you know, 3 points of anything. This is like, no, an actual pretty strident correlation.
What are the elements? You got a prime minister, you have
a pig, and fucking.
You have a pig.
A pig, a dick, and a prime minister walk into a bar.
Right.
That's a
Artek says, hey, why are you guys all separate? Anyways, yeah. So, you know, whatever. Okay, Rosemary's Baby. Thank you. Sorry. I just had to say that.
No, I think this is... All right. So, obviously, we don't even have to go into the idea of the pig being anything ritualistic or, like, the symbolic significance of the pig. Which we certainly could, but it's almost like almost unnecessary in the respect of, like, this is such an explicit thing. But there's Bill. Maybe you'll get this more than I know. You were a bigger fan of Chris Knowles. You know, he's made the point, and he's not alone in this point. But I'm sort of thinking of him as I say it, whenever there's a really big story in the media that sort of everyone's talking about, what is it covering for? Or what is it drawing our attention away from? Do you give any significance or any thought to this idea of, it's just, you know, sort of reminds me of a postmodern version of, you know, the Monica Lewinsky scandal?
Yeah. I was reading about that last night, so that's fucking weird that you'd say that. Okay, so Peter Lavinda was bringing that scandal up to point out the American public's relationship to leaders as that basically religion and politics are supposed to be separate, yet something that doesn't determine somebody's job as president takes more... becomes more substantial than the things do. And so, but it's because it's a moral issue. And so we were like, we need these moralistic people, yet at the same time, there's all these other things that are excused. Yet the other, like, you see, it's weird. It's a very convoluted issue.
Right. But it's not immoral to, you know, bomb the shit out of millions of little brown children, but don't you dare put your dick anywhere near livestock. That's just immoral.
Well, beyond livestock, I just mean, I mean, are you saying Lewinsky was livestock? I mean, I don't know if I go that far. Hey, let's be careful.
No. Actually, what I was referring to was the idea that this story in itself would be a sort of smokescreen for something more important or a more relevant thing that sort of having our attention drawn away from. I knew a guy back in college who was in the Marines who, he didn't go to college with me, but he made a point that he would never say what it was, but he said he was in the Marines during the Monica Lewinsky scandal and that whole story was like, basically they did a bunch of really shady shit at that time, utilizing that story to draw everyone's attention away from.
Well, I have an initial read on this then.
Yeah.
You're going to point out that it's Year of the Pig.
So I typed in Year of the Pig, right? Chinese zodiac. China's in the news right now. You've got the Pope, you know, sitting down, going to be the first to speak at the White House, right? And you have the Chinese prime minister, right? Or what's his name? X-I? Xi? How do you pronounce X-I?
I don't know.
Anyways, but he's coming to America, right? He's in the house. You get the Pope in the house, you get the Chinese prime minister in the house,
yeah,
right?
Big events.
Clinton, Lewinsky started her affair with Bill Clinton in 1995. which was the year of the pig.
Clinton bombed the Chinese embassy.
Hillary
in Iraq.
Is in deep trouble right
That's
now
true.
With all this bullshit going on.
You just said it. He just said it. Violator just said it. That's big. Clinton bombed the embassy.
Maybe this is sort of like to make Hillary look good. You look good.
How are you going to make Hillary look good? What are you going to do? I mean,
oh, sympathize, like, you know? To remind people of the sort of sins of the
because
patriarchal.
Because she's not sticking her dick in a pig's mouth.
No, she's got lying under oath multiple times, which no one seems to remember. Like, I don't get it. I mean, Whitewater and all of this shit. It's like all of that just, like, never happened or something, or maybe, I don't know. It's weird. I don't get it.
I'm just talking about the sexual dominator culture.
Right.
That is part of the boys' network and the thing that we're trying to get past. You know, you've got the prime minister part of the boys' club. You go back to the year of the pig, Bill Clinton getting a blowjob in the Oval Office. And yeah, Hillary's got all these political kind of transgressions, but they're still not, but that's politics. I mean, if you play the game, you're going to be, you're not, if you're in the game, you're in the game. You can't not be scarred by those kinds of transgressions. But this weird sexual dominator thing is something she's not part of. It's one in a Christopher Knowles way. Maybe you can kind of go that way. I don't know. It's a bit of a stretch. But.
Yeah, there's something that's tripping me out though, and I posted about it. I think you guys probably saw it. So like, if you start 2001: A Space Odyssey from the fade in of the Dawn of Man, and you align it with the fade in of Rosemary's Rosemary's Baby, so after Paramount. So, you know, after the fucking Thus Spake Zarathustra and the thing goes on, the films are actually the exact same length. They came out within a month of each other. Everyone went to the theater at the time and looked at the two posters, one with a fetus, and it said, what is it, trying to appeal to the hippies with the ultimate trip for 2001, and then the other one's got the baby carriage. And so one is the star child, and then the other one is Satan's child. What the fuck?
The overlap on that picture is crazy. I thought the baby's face was covered in blood or something. Because it's all shaded from the hill that the carriage is on.
Yeah, it looked kind of weird, huh? Yeah. I know. But
I just want to say, I didn't comment, but last night, I don't know if you saw the image I made. I ended up actually changing it slightly. Because I saw what you did. Last night I was playing with an overlay of the Rosemary's Baby movie poster, doing a transparency for this episode of Synchronize that I was finishing up, and I'm working on an image for it. I'm doing all this sort of stuff. And then I popped onto Facebook just to see if the woman, Brielle, if she had like any pictures of her baby, and I wasn't even sure if like that would, you know, was that something I should be using? Is that, you know, whatever? I just wanted to sort of like go on Facebook and see, and if I saw something, I'd contact her, whatever. But I go on Facebook, and the first thing I see when I sign to Facebook is your thing of playing with the transparency of that movie poster. And I was like, oh, fuck, what are we doing?
right. Well, that's the thing, man. It's like, and I watched the two together. And I'm trying to fix my computer right now. I just brought it to a friend because I really want to overlay the two films with the soundtrack that I have for Rosemary's Baby and do it with both. I want to superimpose the two films together. But yeah, I just the whole time I'm watching it, I already have that. Like when I'm relating to 2001, that you're looking at this whole process as an impregnation. And so I relate to the ship as either the phallus, the discovery. As a phallus, and then the sperm being released. That's the Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite is like the story of this, sperm. Kind of interesting. But that's how I never did, like, I literally, like, merged the films in my mind. But I can't help but notice that, like, Black Mirror seems to be like the symbolism that they're playing with throughout the show is like, it's the main points of Kubrick. And I had this conversation with Patrick the other night where he was, I don't know if you guys ever seen Full Circle, let alone the John Lennon Full Circle thing, The Haunting of Julia. You guys watched it? Anybody?
I haven't actually been able to make it through the movie now.
Right. Well, okay. That's fine. But Patrick pointed out to me something that's just totally crazy, and that's this little doll that the film actually subliminally centers around. And it's like, basically, one, you know, they used to have those monkeys that they hit the cymbals together, like monkey shines, you know, except it's not a monkey, it's a clown. And it assumes that it's like this possessed doll, but they never mention it. There's no word of it, but it's a reoccurring thing throughout the movie. And it's there in the first shot, and it's there at the end. And Patrick was acknowledging that it seems to be doing the thing of the uncanny that Freud was talking about, where you have an object that's literally has no life, but you're giving it life, or you're relating to it like it has life. And in that, it brings up one of our greatest fears. For whatever reason, you just would observe that if you're looking at a doll and the doll turns its head or acts like a person, there's something extremely terrifying about that. And what is that triggering? And so that was the question of the uncanny that inspired Kubrick, admittedly. But
did you?
When I was, yeah.
Oh, sorry. No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just realizing that in the grand picture, like if you're going to follow that logic through and how it's this chain that runs throughout almost everything Kubrick did, let alone like a lot of the synchronicity that I'm working with, it's just that one point of artificial intelligence, Pinocchio, reoccurring again and again. And I was just realizing that that's exactly what we're doing. Like that's the direction that things are going, is in this artificial intelligence direction. Yet Freud was pointing out that that's one of our biggest fears. And so I was saying, isn't it interesting that we're putting all of our energy into the thing that we have the greatest aversion to in terms of our psychology?
Isn't that like going full circle, though? Because breathing life into a clay atom is,
yes,
like making an inanimate object animate.
Right, which is why The Haunting of Julia is also called Full Circle. I literally was relating to it in just that way. And so, yeah, that's really weird.
Well, I just wanted to. I remembered someone brought up on Facebook, brought up the old Rosemary's White Baby album, Always Record, that you guys did. Mm-hmm. I believe it was that episode where you guys talk about how the opening music of Rosemary's Baby sort of corresponds with the opening sort of notes or chimes that are used in some of
the Double Fantasy.
Double Fantasy songs, right. So when you're talking about the monkey clown with the cymbals,
yes,
I can't help but think of how many that was a sort of a motif at the time because of the popularity of spirit, like the sort of Hare Krishna crowd and stuff like that, using these little symbols. You know, poets would open prayers or poems with these little symbols.
Sure.
You know, this idea of sort of like a, whether it's a centering or a, I don't know, even like a channeling technique, right?
Mm-hmm.
To sort of center or contact the other side. This idea that you would have this little clown or monkey clanging the cymbals sort of just hit me as being indicative of that.
Sure. Well, we were also tripping out on the fact that if you go through John Lennon's life, it's been shown that every all the major events of his life, for whatever reason, seem to take place on April Fools. Many of the big events of his life, and that's been well represented, and it's really a mindfuck. And so there's this repeated theme of him being the fool. It's the fool on the hill. The more so as time went on, especially, which is clear. But yeah, I was just realizing that the little clown character is very much like, it's like a mix between the fucking Monkey Shines clown and the fool, you know. And then also, yeah, I can totally dig what you're saying. I can visualize Ginsberg, you know, Allen Ginsberg with his whole Krishna thing with the, yeah.
I mean, right now I'm looking at a picture of Violator Hellspawn's Skype avatar, which is a demon-possessed clown.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty convenient, huh?
Yeah. Very convenient, Mr. Hellspawn.
I'm going through my pictures right now to find a picture because I didn't think I had an avatar. It's not showing up for me. So it's funny you mentioned that. Because I was about to pick that one out.
Where's that evil clown from?
Spawn. It's John Leguizamo.
That's John Leguizamo?
Yeah.
Put on weight.
I know, you wouldn't think so, huh? But no, well, that's the movie. They made it Spawn.
That terrible, 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 terrible movie.
Yeah, they couldn't make any more money off of that, right? They tried in every single way, but they...
They fucked it up, dude. It had so much potential was the thing. But it was like, you know, whatever. I mean, who? Everyone's a critic now, you know, whatever. It's what it is. It's what it is. Let's not, you know... I mean,
hey, I was a teenager who was excited about that movie and actually walked out of it.
Good for you, Alan.
Good for you and your disappointed, crushed teenager dreams.
Right.
Well, you recognized at an early age. You said, this is shit, and I'm not going to take any shit.
Yeah. I would take more credit for that, except for the fact that, I mean, I actually, it's why I see so few movies because
we're a group that sees mostly the worst movies that no one's ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, but some of those were, well, that's the weird thing, man, is that like The Haunting of Julia, Full Circle, it's like a C movie. But synchronistically, it brings it all, that and Black Christmas bring it all together.
I tried watching last night Whatever Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, did you make it all the way through?
Yeah.
Anything worthwhile in there?
Well, the thing that's worthwhile in the first place from the get-go is just knowing that, what's her name? Patty Duke? How do you do? What the fuck is her name? The woman in Valley of the Dolls. Who played Rosemary?
I think you might be
same
right.
Woman. Is it Patty Duke? You know what? I'm doing a show right now, but I've been a little spacey. I mean, I woke up at fucking 4 p.m. I was up all night. Hold on, let me see here. Barbara, where's the fucking thing, man? I was up all night looking at Catcher in the Rye.
I was up all night fast-forwarding my way through Whatever Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Did you really fast-forward? Oh, it's on YouTube, I mean.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I was skipping, and I'm like, wow, it's still this, huh?
Shouldn't have taken all night, then.
Right.
No, I mean, that was... really take all night. I had to stop to masturbate for a few hours, then go back to it.
Few hours, Jesus.
No, call him the slow hand.
But no, I mean, I was in a sort of Rosemary's Baby spiral last night, and what's really funny to me is So there's a line that I used a little audio clip at the beginning of this Synchronize video is Mini Cassavetes. Is that how you'd say that?
Yeah.
What?
Cassavetes?
Mini Cassavetes? Like a little guy?
Isn't that her first name?
Her name is Minnie, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Like M-I-N-N-I-E, like Minnie Mouse?
Which is funny because she's like a female version of Mickey Mouse, you know?
Oh, shit. Oh, that's shit. Cool. Because right. She feeds Rosemary the moose, but then when she's under the effects of the drug, she says, it's nothing, it's just a mouse bite.
Right. Yeah.
Minnie Mouse. Yeah. Holy shit.
And then you have, this is important, and this is the bait.
The mice, the fucking mice.
So this is the key to everything, is the first lines of Rosemary's Baby. Because what happens when they're first walking up to Dakota, and he goes, are you a doctor? So what's up, Doc? And he goes, no, he's an actor. nobody loves an albatross or whatever. And then it's like, oh, he's in commercials. Oh, commercials. That's where the money's at. So Rosemary's Baby and 2001 A Space Odyssey and the White Album are all commercials. And they're not the usual type of commercials. And so in the same way that John Lennon was presenting a commercial for peace, he's doing an advertising campaign for peace. War is over. You have these massive like propaganda pieces loaded with subliminals that are essentially commercials. And my question is, when he has that line, and it's total wild speculation, did he fucking get, like, did people get paid by vested interests to create these things for certain reasons? Like, is that, like, you know, because I was tripping out on what that would be like from Roman Polanski's perspective.
Like if someone approached Roman Polanski and said, here's a few million dollars if you make a movie like promoting, I don't know, pro-life or Satanism or whatever.
Whatever their aims are. And for me, I look at those things and they're like they're the seal of the 60s before the 60s are over, because they're literally diverting the direction. When Rosemary shaves her head, when she cuts off all her hair, that's extremely symbolic. But the thing is that it was presented as the new style. And so everyone was growing their hair out. And then Mia Farrow, who's, you know, with the fucking Beatles, everyone, you know, relates to her as like a representative of the movement. And you have, she cuts her hair. She laid it down for all to see. And so there's like this weird kind of thing going on there. I just can't help it. When I see that, and then when I look at 2001 and the whole thing is about covering up this discovery, and creating, you know, a different narrative for the populace, even though it's the most significant discovery on planet Earth, and they're not going to tell the people about it. And then, you guys see what I'm getting at? I mean, it seems like it's got this huge public relations aspect.
Well, you remember who produced or who got Rosemary's Baby off the ground, right? Robert Evans, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he took Paramount Pictures, which was like the 11th out of 12 movie studios at the time in L.A. or in Hollywood. And Robert Evans was thrown into the head of this production company. And to do Rosemary's Baby was just a shot in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long shot by a nobody production company. And it just skyrocketed out of nowhere. And the next thing you know, Paramount Pictures is like the number one production company in Hollywood.
Right.
The story behind Robert Evans and how he revolutionized, you know. So then you get Love Story with Ryan O'Neal, and then you get Chinatown. Mm-hmm. And he was doing basically all these like independent, non-mainstream movies through that production company.
Always with knives. Every fucking time, pretty much, and they'll land on the floor, like in the, what is it, the moon, what's that Roman Polanski movie called, on the boat? You know, that's what I'm talking about.
I don't know, but can I just throw out here, this is a sort of overlap between with what you both are saying. So Bill, you're saying that Paramount was sort of the bottom feeder studio that had a hit, and David, you're suggesting a sort of, you know, a taking money to do a commercial. So when I was reading about the backstory of Polanski's film Repulsion, what it says is that basically Polanski came up with that idea to make a movie to make enough money to work on a different movie. He was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, this will sell. I'll do some shit that people will, you know, whatever. So, right.
And it's Orson Welles model.
Right. But then he couldn't get it distributed, so he ended up going through the film distribution company he ended up signing with was a group that basically did softcore porn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Was the only, because the bigger, more mainstream studios wouldn't touch it. So I'm just saying, if this is the sort of thinking, and I don't, you know, this is sort of a, I don't want to paint the whole thing with too broad a brush, but to say it's not much of a stretch to say, yeah, so here's a guy who's saying, hey, I want to have enough money to do the projects I really care about, or just have the money, or whatever the fuck. Sure, I'll, you know,
Well, so it's weird because it didn't come to it this way. But after the fact, upon considering that idea about people getting paid on top of whatever they're getting paid or something, or just like some kind of favor. But I was realizing that when I play it with the family jams, that towards the end you have, if I gave you $1 million, would you work for me, from Manson, which is an extreme, it's a cynical song, like just about all his songs. But the whole point of it is, if I paid you enough, could I call you boy? And I was thinking to myself, my God, if that's actually, like, if that happened on any level with, and I know that that happens. I mean, that's the thing with Bernays. They paid all these people. All those women who stood there with their freedom torches or whatever, they all got paid. And so I'm just like, I was wondering about that. I was like, how insane must that feel if this thing that you couldn't predict came out of the thing and you're sitting with that and you can't even say it because you've already become their bitch because you submitted to whatever it was and you did this huge project for them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the killing of his wife becomes like a snuff version of Indecent Proposal?
Yeah, essentially, or Death and the Maiden. Yeah. No,
I mean, which basically is Rosemary's Baby, right? Will you sell your, you know, we'll make you famous if you sell your wife to us. We're going to use your wife. We're going to rape and destroy her and use her as a vessel for the things that we want. And you'll get rewarded for it.
Right. So it's I'm not suggesting that he willingly.
Well,
did that.
No. But I'm not saying intentionality. I'm talking about the subtext here.
Yeah. Right. Because that's what comes with it.
Right. Like, and essentially, you know, Bill's talking about this dominator culture. I mean, essentially, right. As a man, you have to pay me $1 million to be your bitch.
Right.
But as a man, we automatically presuppose that the woman is our bitch, is our property to trade as such. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's sort of, it goes back to the
furniture, like in Soylent Green.
Yeah, you know, it's this idea, like, just, there's layers upon layers of essentially a slave trade. Whether that's, to what level that's intentional or conscious, it's...
Did you notice that the Fearless Vampire Killers has the same essential title as Doctor Strangelove? Because it literally does the thing where it's like the Fearless Vampire Killers, or pardon me, madam, but your teeth are in my neck. And it's the same thing as Doctor Strangelove, or how I learned to stop worrying and love the bomb. I wonder if they have the same amount of syllables. Probably not. But yeah, no, it's just, I don't know.
But that was a common motif.
Or yeah.
Yeah.
It's just funny because, you know, I don't know. It came out in 1967. That's later, but still, I don't know. I don't know if you guys ever saw Venus in Fur, his most recent film. It's absolutely incredible. It's a great fucking movie. One of the best things Roman Polanski's ever done in a certain sense. I thought it was really weird that, so when I was trying to figure out, so Lady Gaga produced Art Pop, and I was trying to figure out what the deal was, and I knew it related to Venus, and I was working on it, and I was like, oh my God, fucking Roman Polanski just came out with his movie Venus in Fur. Well, Venus in Fur, I believe came out, I can't remember, I think, yeah, it came out 7 days before Art Pop, which has Venus on the cover. And I ended up doing it with a film called Venus in Furs, and it's really undeniable. I thought it was really weird because Rosemary's Baby came out seven days before Robert Kennedy's assassination, the actual shooting. He died the next day, but when he was shot by Sirhan Sirhan, that was 7 days after Rosemary's Baby. And I thought it was weird that it was 7 days, because there's a 7 day thing with Sabbath, literally means cycle of seven. And so that's, you know, a symbolic thing or whatever. I don't know. It's still total speculation, but I thought it was interesting that there were two cases of seven and seven, you know.
What I thought was interesting is last night I noticed, so we've talked about how the people on the boat during the Rosemary's Baby rape scene, essentially, like when she goes on the boat in the hallucination.
Yeah, the Scientology scene, yeah.
How there's a guy who looks like JFK, right? Right. On IMDb, what I didn't realize is that on IMDb, and I haven't you know, I don't know who credits such things or what the logic is there, but there's a woman credited as Mrs. John F. Kennedy.
What?
Wait, if someone's credited as Jackie?
She's credited as Mrs. John F. Kennedy.
On Rosemary's Baby, IMDb?
Yes.
I'm going to look that up right now, dude.
And then I was looking up what else this actress had been in, and it wasn't a whole lot. Yeah, I was like, well, that's rather explicit.
Well, you know, so my big thing with that scene, and I don't really know, but I take the captain to be relating to L. Ron Hubbard, and that's, I mean, it's a reasonable assessment, because, I mean, the consultant for the film is actually Anton LaVey. He's not in it, you know, but he was consulted about it, and then there's that weird thing with the argument that Susan Atkins was, I've talked about this last time we talked actually, but that Susan Atkins was with LaVey, they did a thing where she got out of a coffin and pointed at her victim when she was on acid, and she was a vampire in this thing. They did like a pseudo ritual thing, and Susan Atkins, who ended up killing Sharon Tate, she was there with Anton LaVey, who was the consultant for Rosemary's Baby. And I'm like, that seems weird. Like, that seems really weird. Like, that wasn't mentioned in the trial. Like, that wasn't something somebody might want to point out if you're, you know, basically charging someone with witchcraft for the first time since, you know, Salem days. So, okay, I'm looking for your Miss John F. Kennedy. So you're saying it's in the full cast, I guess?
I sent you the link in the...
Well, yeah. IMDb is what you were saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
oh yeah, there it is. Patricia Ann
Sammy
Connelly.
Davis Jr.'s book in Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, repeat that. I'm sorry.
Sammy Davis Jr.'s.
Oh yeah, it's next to Sexual Behavior in Humans.
And that's the book where he comes out as a Satanist or something like that.
I don't know about that. I just know that it's a book by Sammy Davis Jr. and I hadn't gone further than that.
I did. Yes, I can.
No, that's another book. That's not his book. Or maybe that one. Maybe that was. It's not the one that she reads on.
Yes,
the,
I can. If only Frank Sinatra says I can.
I don't. I know that she reads something on the couch, but I don't believe that that was his book. I think that that was a different book. But Patricia Ann Conway, she's in Get Smart, Rosemary's Baby, Perry Mason, and My Three Sons, and that's it.
Exactly. That's all she's in. Rose, and sorry, hold on a second. Will Morgan's calling me.
Jesus Christ.
He's on the wrong line.
It's true. He is on the wrong
line. Hey, I'm doing an Always Record. Why don't you hop on Skype? Oh. Jump on, man. We'll be waiting for you.
He probably knows who fucking Patricia Ann Conway
is.
No, she's got AC in her initials.
Yeah, exactly. So this woman's only in a handful of things. I do think it's interesting that the Get Smart was, that was an old Mark LaQuaire thing, how Get Smart, like, seriously predicted 9/11.
Oh, well, I found that before him, actually. But
Fuck Mark LaQuaire. You get credit for that. I'm sorry.
No, I don't get credit for that. In fact, I think it was maybe Kevin Halcott or something. I can't remember. I'm just saying, but one of the first things I found in the sync community was actually relating to Get Smart. Maybe it was their final episode or something. There was a thing with, what's his name? Mel Brooks. That Mel Brooks had a thing. Yeah, there was major 9/11 stuff. But the woman who says that she's Miss John F. Kennedy and, Rosemary's Baby, the episode of Get Smart from 1968, she's an operator as Patty Conway. So she literally has her own name in actually everything she... Oh, I see. That's just saying that that's what it is.
She's credited, exactly. Instead of, and you know, Derp. In one thing she'd be credited as Patricia Ann Conway, and another thing as Pat Conway, and as another thing she's credited as Patty Conway. It's like, you know, it's like if you were famous, you'd be like, credited as MK Ultrasound, credited as DVD Platypus or something, you know?
Right, so this is the episode, season 4, episode 14, One Nation Invisible. A scientist who shows up at Max's apartment invisible. When she finally appears, she's a beautiful woman that 99 catches Max with. So Maxwell Smart gets with this woman, but she, I guess...
Maxwell Silverhammer?
Yeah, I know. I thought it immediately. which is really heavy. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the Eye of the Devil, Sharon Tate's debut film with Abbey Road that I have posted. But Maxwell Silverhammer is really interesting when the physician is there, when it's referring to a doctor, and immediately you have a doctor in the cut. It's pretty ridiculous. That whole, I don't know. Have you guys seen that? You guys check that out?
No.
I recommend you check that out, man. It's crazy. I've watched it probably 20-something times now. anyway.
I was just adding that the Yes, I Can book is the book that Rosemary's reading on the couch.
Yes.
Before she's interrupted.
But that is a Sammy Davis Jr. book?
It's his autobiography, right?
Oh, okay.
And so Sammy is a member of the Rat Pack. So Mrs. Frisbee and the Secret of Nim, that's a Rat Pack. So,
and you pointed out, Sinatra's married to Mia Farrow at the time of Rosemary's Baby. And then there's the, of course, Yes We Can backwards is Thank You, Satan, right?
Oh!
You know what I'm talking about, right?
No, what's that? I
you never
it.
Heard of it, this?
The Obama and those kids saying yes.
Yeah. You know, the whole, all right, so the whole, during Obama's campaign, how the whole thing was, yes, we can, and he'd say, he'd go, something, 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 yes, we can, and everyone goes, yes, we can!
Oh,
and then these,
fuck.
Like, conspiracy people, like, played that shit backwards, and it's, thank you, Satan. Thank you, Satan.
Yeah.
And they made this whole thing about how Obama was like, you know, the fucking Antichrist or whatever, because yes, we can backwards is thank you, Satan.
How does it? I need to hear that because I can't.
I'm sure if you type it into YouTube, I'm sure you will find multiple examples.
Jesus. So yes, I can happens to be Sammy Davis Jr.'s book.
He's a Satanist.
And he's a Satanist. There and so, but this is the thing, and this apparently is fucking true, is that John F. Kennedy was in the church of Anton LaVey, church,
what?
Quote unquote, yeah, and so was Marilyn Monroe, and I keep coming across that again and again, and I don't think it's that outlandish because this is the social club. This is. Your schmooze, like, this is where those fucking people are. I mean, it's just a
all
sex
the
club.
Best people. All
it's
the
just
best
a
people.
Sex drugs club. Yeah. That's you know, that's the thing. But the thing is that when you have a group like this with these high ranking people involved, Doris Day, Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra, all of these fuckers, and then you have apparently Susan Atkins. Who killed Sharon Tate, is there?
Right.
I mean, really?
And
I don't know.
Just to say, it's not even that outlandish either, is to say, like, you know, what was Ben Franklin in the Hellfire Club, right? You know, I mean, since our sort of the inception, like, our the presidents we are told to revere as the greatest figures, And I just want to be clear, I have massive sympathy for being sort of opposed to the church, but, you know, you guys know about the Hellfire Club?
Of course.
Not
that well, you know.
Franklin had 14 bodies buried under his house, including children, when they excavated it.
Including children, yeah.
My wife's little sister had to do... For school, she was complaining to me. She's like, "Oh, I have to do this book report on or something on. I have to read the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin for my school book report or something. And I was like, hey, you want to know what you should really look up? I was like, look up the Hellfire Club. It'll be so much more interesting than anything your teachers tell you. I don't think she went through.
There's an HBO series called John Adams.
I've seen that totally.
And it's really good. But the way that they depict Ben Franklin in that and how he was a liaison to France and he was one of the guys going over to France and hanging with those people. And I mean, it's Hollywood is where essentially the elite, the upper echelon of France who are so far removed from the everyday life of the average American and just the regular average human being on the planet. And they're just so lost in their own bizarre world of getting through another boring day in whatever way possible. I just feel like they really depict what that would look like very, very well.
This brings me back to an idea that I've had for a while. I mean, or sort of been thinking about a lot lately is, right, so these are the people who, as you say, their lives are actually pretty boring because they're totally rich. They're totally disconnected from any normal human existence. So they're trying to find ways to entertain themselves. But so they are also the only ones that have the time to study, whether it be esoteric information or think about things like enlightenment, because they don't have to get on their knees and get their hands in the pig shit. Right. Right?
They had to fuck a pig.
They might have had to fuck a pig.
Well, they didn't really have to, but they were like, you know what?
I'm already here. The pig's there.
I might as well. I'm fully aroused. I might as well.
Well, just to quickly interject, I figure that's what I gathered a lot from Barry Lyndon.
Mm-hmm.
To tie it back to that, is that if you watch Barry Lyndon, and you're one of these lords or ladies of the manors and you're living on these great estates, life is incredibly boring. There is like nothing going on. So, you know, a guy like Barry Lyndon going off to war sounds like an exciting thing. It's exactly. The only alternative to this, you know. So Kubrick films a lot of the scenes in Barry Lyndon as if they're still lifes, right? He's bringing the painting of the masters of that age onto the screen, and he frames the shots as if they were, you know, living still life paintings. But it's really a documentary of just the stagnant pace of wake up, eat breakfast, go out, ride the horse,
dude,
come back, play another game of fucking – they didn't even know any good card games. They're playing fucking like gin. And then there's dinner, and then you go to bed, and you wake up, and they're just absolutely decaying zombies of some sort. That you reach the top of this certain ladder, you've escaped the fray, but for what gain? There's nothing at the top.
Isn't
of the
that
ladder.
That Sean Connery movie, Zardoz or whatever?
Yeah.
but no, it's so true, dude. When they're shooting at each other at the end in the fucking barn. Yeah. And then just in general, like, there's this malaise. And it's like, they're like, live, die? I don't fucking know. Like, you're totally correct in that. And that's what I thought was wrong with, like, Jay Widener's feeling on Barry Lyndon. I just felt like he didn't get the point of it. And so he was like, oh, look, Kubrick must have been bored because I was so bored while watching this. And it's like, I don't think Kubrick was bored with Barry Lyndon. I don't think he did The Shining to make things more exciting. I mean, maybe.
Right, you're saying the lifestyle of the people in the movie are boring.
Right, which isn't about Kubrick being bored. It's about him trying to make a point about, from the context.
Two. Thank you for listening to this broadcast from SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other SyncBook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leitz Mathematical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Fine Just Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com. You don't like my point of view, you think that I'm insane. It's not sane, it's not sane. Oh.